Well, today we're going to talk about friendships. And the thing I want you to remember from today is simply a little phrase that says, friends determine the quality and direction of your life. Your friends will determine the quality and direction of your life. I have friends that if I needed anything, I could call on them to help, and they do it with no questions asked. Same is true for them. I mean, we need good, solid friendships. When I first got to Ocala, of course, we didn't have a building, and we didn't have a church office either. And so I'm not one of those guys that do really well working out of the home. And so I was like, I got to find somewhere to work. You know, there's only so many hours you can spend in Panera Bread or somewhere like that or a coffee shop. And I realized that the library, the public library, was open, and it was quiet and no distractions. And so I started to go to the library every day, and I'd get there at right just before 10 a.m. because they opened at 10. And every day that I'd go there, there was always a group of homeless people, and a lot of people, that they would also be standing out there with me waiting to go in. And so as soon as they'd go in, the first thing they do is they get on the computers, the public computers that the library offers. And I thought, man, that's awesome. You know, I really appreciate these people. They're looking for jobs. They're looking to enhance their skills and things like that. And so I would walk by the computers, and I'll tell you, 99 out of 100% of the time, they're not looking for jobs. They're not on some online course. They're on Facebook. And I thought, wait a second. How do you have all these friends on Facebook, but you're homeless? I mean, what kind of friends are those? And then I'm thinking, well, what about like us? You know, like for me, I've got a lot of friends on Facebook or, you know, followers on Twitter or whatever, and yet I've found times that I'm really lonely. So how do you have all these friends on Facebook or followers on Twitter or followers on Instagram and all this social media, and yet, you know, one of the things in the church that I deal with regularly with people is they talk about how lonely they are. Like, how are we so lonely when we've got so many friends? And so today's question I want to answer is, what does it look like to have really good, wise friendships? Not just friends, but really good, wise friendships. Those kind of friendships that are pointing you towards the things of God rather than away from. And so Proverbs 13:20, it's actually in the New King James. I like how it's translated here. It says, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Okay, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. The thing is, wisdom in friendships is not necessarily a lack of information. In other words, if you're saying, well, I don't have wise friends, it's typically not because you lack information on how to get them. I mean, just think about this. It says the companion of fools will be destroyed, and yet we have so many people that will get in a car with somebody that's driving and they're drunk. Is that an information problem? No. In fact, somebody who gets behind the wheel, who's been drinking, you just say, that is not an information problem. I mean, in the bars they have posted don't drink and drive. You have free services. You can make a phone call so that you don't drink and drive. There's ads on TV. There's ads on the radio. You can watch Cops, right? There's billboards. Everywhere you go, they say, don't drink and drive. So this is not a wisdom, lack of information type of issue. The difference that a wise person does, a wise person knows the truth and then obeys the truth. And if we will walk with the wise, then what's the inevitable conclusion? We will be wise. And if we walk with fools, what does Solomon say? We'll be destroyed. It's really that simple. And how many times have you heard a parent weeping, saying, you know, he's a good kid. He just got caught up with the wrong crowd. What happened? He didn't walk with the wise. And friends determine the quality and direction of our lives. And so as parents, what we do a lot of times is we start to blame bad influences. Well, it was this kid in the school that was bullying, or it was this teacher that he had, or it was a boss that he had, or whatever. And so we come up with all these excuses. You know what it comes down to, though? We really read it our first week. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. See, some are fools, not because they got in with the wrong crowd. Some are fools simply because they don't know Jesus. They don't have the foundational cornerstone to build a proper house. And so the entry point to wisdom is knowing who God is and what he's done. That's the beginning. And then from there, you continue to build. And honestly, if you don't get that, if you don't get that Christ is the cornerstone, that's the foundation that we build on, honestly, the next 10 weeks, none of it will matter. Because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And then the fear of the Lord, then everything from there, all the other friendships, all the other relationships then would flow from that. And so let's talk about, number one, the value of friends. The value of friends. So I'm thinking back through this week, and I'm thinking, what are some famous friendships? And of course, all the spiritual people would say, David and Jonathan, right? David and Jonathan, that's a good friendship, right? Well, other people would say, what about the Lone Ranger and Tonto? That's a good friendship, right? Batman and Robin, Woody and Buzz. Let me tell my age, Lenny and Squiggy, right? Laverne and Shirley, Cheech and Chong. Good friends, right? How about Jake and Elwood? Who's Jake and Elwood? The Blues Brothers, right? Oh, man, I'm good. I'm so proud of you guys. You still remember that. Friends, right? Friends determine the quality and direction of our lives. Jake and Elwood, the Blues Brothers, they were on a mission from God. Friends determine the quality and direction of your life. And God didn't put us on this planet just to have a relationship with him. He put us here to have relationships with others. Listen, we need friends. We need friends who are going to push us to Christ. And if you don't have somebody like that in your life, then you're not going to be the Christian that you were intended to be. And so let's look at the value of friends. Proverbs 17, verse 17 says this, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. You know the first thing I thought of when I saw that? Brothers were born to fight. And I'm thinking, that is true in my family. Man, when we were kids, we would fight, me and my older brother, we would fight and fight and fight. And not like the, you know, mom, he hit me. It was, I mean, we hit each other. We fought each other, physically, fist fight, and I lost every time. In fact, I remember I came back from boot camp, and I'm thinking, I'm pretty strong now. I can, you know, probably take my older brother now. And so I went at him, and I said, all right, come on. Calling him names that I can't really repeat here, but basically, you pansy, get up off the couch, lazy, this and that. And he said, boy, don't mess with me. And I said, come on, you want some of this? I'll give you some. And he said, don't mess with me. And I said, come on, get up. And I mean, I've got fist out and everything. And I don't know how he did it. But he got off the couch, swept my leg from underneath me, my left leg. I flew back, hit my head on the corner of the coffee table. I ain't never messed with him since. A brother's born for adversity. Well, I don't think he's actually saying that you're supposed to fight with your brothers. I think what he's saying is that he's equating a friend with a brother and saying that a friend is as good as or better than a brother. Why? Listen, when adversity comes, your brother has to be there. He's family. He doesn't have a choice. He doesn't even have to like you. But just because he's part of the family, he has to be there. He's your brother. But a friend, he chooses to be there. A friend doesn't have to love you. He doesn't have to be there. He chooses to love you, and your circumstances really don't matter. Because a true friend, what does it say? He loves at all times. But notice that it says a friend, right? It doesn't say a bunch of friends. It's actually a friend, one friend. And that's significant because in our culture, in our community, what we do is we say that we need to have many friends, whether that's on Facebook or followers on Instagram or being popular in school. And listen, it is so easy to like a photo, isn't it? I mean, you just press the button and then you've liked the photo. But it's not easy to love people whose lives have turned upside down. It's not easy to like people who are mourning or people who are depressed. But what does a true friend do? He loves at all times. Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, a man of too many friends comes to ruin. But there is, what does it say? A friend that sticks closer than a brother. And so you see the difference between many friends and a friend. Those seeking popularity want many friends. The wise, they want one friend, maybe two. Because a friend sticks closer than a brother. And the reason I believe that a man of many friends comes to ruin is because if you're going to have many friends, you're going to also have to make many compromises. If you want to be popular with a whole bunch of people, then you're going to have to compromise with a whole bunch of people, all of the things that you know to be true and right and honorable and glorifying to God. And so one true friend is better than 5,000 Facebook friends. And it, honestly, it is a very rare thing to find a close friend. It is so rare to find somebody who is just a close friend. Easy to find somebody who will like your vacation pictures, right? That's easy to do. Easy to find somebody who will retweet your latest meme or great quote. But honestly, we don't have the capacity to have tons of close friends. It takes time to develop those things. It takes time to it takes depth in relationship. It takes going through things together to really develop good, close friendships. David and Jonathan, great friends, right? What happened when Jonathan died? Did we ever see David coming back into that kind of friendship with somebody? No. It takes time. Even Jesus, he had 12 disciples, right? But he had three close friends. Three that were part of that inner circle. I think that's a great model. It's better to have a few deep relationships than thousands of acquaintances. And if you're one of those folks that has a bunch of acquaintances but no close friends, it could be a pride issue. It could be something where you want to know people, but you don't want people to know you. And you think that, man, if people really knew me for who I was, then they wouldn't like me very much. And if I really unzipped and said, this is me, this is my humanity, these are my sin issues, these are the things I struggle with, this is where my marriage is at and where my family is at, and this is where my kids are struggling. You think, man, if I did that, if I let anybody in there, wow, they would not think very highly of me, which is a pride issue. There's value in having a good, wise friend. And so number two here, the choosing of friends, because that really becomes a big question, isn't it? If hanging out with fools is going to get me destroyed, how do I choose good, wise friends? And when we're young, our parents are our primary influences. And as we grow up, then our friends become our primary influences. That's why I say that friends determine the quality and direction of our lives. I mean, think about Solomon. Solomon's problem was not that he didn't know the right thing to do, right? He's the wisest man who ever lived. His problem was the influence that he got from his wives and his concubines. That was Solomon's problems. But really, that's not just Solomon's problem. That's actually a young person problem. So if you're a young person in here today, you see it all the time, maybe that's you, that you will allow a person or a group of people to get you to do something that you swore you'd never do. Why? Because friends determine the quality and direction of our lives. And you go, well, is that just a young person problem? No, it's an old person problem too. We buy nicer cars, you know why? Because we want to impress friends. We buy bigger houses because of the influence of a friend. We buy a new dress. Why? Because she got one. It's friends. I was counseling a family a number of years ago, and they called me from their vacation. And they were just saying, man, what a terrible vacation this was. I mean, it was awful. Cops got called, everything. I mean, just terrible time. And they fought the whole time. By the time they got home, they called me again. They said, we're done. We're ready for divorce. And a few days later, they're posting pictures on Facebook of all these smiling pictures of their family vacation. I thought, why would they do that? And I realized it was more important for them to look right before their friends than to be right with each other. It was a facade. They just wanted to get the image out there that, hey, we're perfect. We got this great family, just went on this great family vacation. Look at us smiling and look at all this going on. And I'm sitting there thinking that it's a complete lie. We can't escape the influence of others, and that's why we need to choose our friends wisely. And there are all kinds of ways that I could have taken the sermon. We could have talked about the scoffer and the mocker and the slanderer and the gossip and all kinds of things. And what I did is I said, why don't we just look at two character traits in Proverbs? Let's look at the fool, and let's look at the wise man. And so we read earlier that whoever walks with the wise will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. You will become like the people you hang out with. So let's have a little fun first, and let's talk about fools. Okay, let's talk about fools. What does the Bible say a fool is? And so maybe you want to write these down in your notes here. We didn't make blanks for them, but I think it's really good just to kind of go, what does a fool look like? What are the character traits? Let's look at Proverbs 1, verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Okay, so what's the character trait of a fool here? They despise wisdom, right? They don't want instruction. So how do you know if they're a fool? Well, first of all, they don't fear God. Secondly, they despise wisdom and instruction. In other words, they're not teachable. You say something to them, and all of a sudden, you're the one that's wrong. Let's keep building on this. Proverbs 10, 23, it says, just the first part, doing wickedness is like sport to a fool. Doing wickedness is like sport to a fool. In other words, bad stuff is fun stuff to fools. It's like a sport. It's like a game. And then they say things like, oh, I was just playing around. What's the big deal? I was just having fun. It's a game. Proverbs 12, verse 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. So look at the contrast. The fool doesn't listen. A fool is always right. He knows it all. Ever met one of them before? You ever met somebody where you're like, man, this guy, no matter what you say to him, he's going to argue against it. And then he's going to push his product or his opinion or whatever. He's just going to tell you all about it, and he's going to speak your mind. And right now, I'm sure everybody in here has somebody in mind that they're thinking of. Now, if you're sitting there going, I can't think of anybody, then somebody's probably thinking of you. A fool is right, always right in his own eyes. He doesn't delight in understanding. Look at Proverbs 14, verse 6. A wise man is cautious, turns away from evil, but a fool is arrogant and careless. He's arrogant, he's careless. Instead of running away from evil, he runs towards evil. Remember, for a fool, doing wickedness is like a sport. It's an Olympic game. Let's do it. Let's get involved in this. Let's go towards danger rather than running away from it. Look at Proverbs 15, verse 5. A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Listen, no discipline is pleasant. That's what Hebrews says. No discipline is pleasant. Nobody wants to be disciplined. But it says here, a fool rejects the discipline. He's not sensible. Well, how does he react to discipline? Look at 12:1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is what? Stupid. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. So someone who rejects discipline is not only not sensible, actually, Solomon says he's stupid. And you're saying, oh, Pastor Mike said stupid. Listen, Proverbs 12:1, God said he's stupid. A fool doesn't want to be disciplined. He's right, they're wrong. He knows they don't. Proverbs 15, a wise son makes the father glad, but a foolish son despises his mother. And so what a great verse, isn't this? Young people, if you see a kid who despises his mother, he's a fool. You see a kid who the way they talk to their mother, the way they react and interact with their mom. And if it's a despising kind of, oh, she's so dumb, she doesn't know anything. If you see that, I'm just telling you, what Proverbs says is, that's a fool right there. You can tell so much in choosing your friends simply by the relationship that they have with their parents. Fools are a burden to their parents. Look at Proverbs 17. A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to him who bore him. And I know when I'm reading these things, it appears that this is just a child-parent thing. I actually think it's broader than that. I think the general principle is an authority issue. How do they relate to authority? Cheating on taxes, cheating on a test, fudging the time clock, coming in late, leaving early, boss doesn't know. Those are authority issues. That's what fools do. Look at Proverbs 20. Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. Now, some of you guys are thinking, I think I married a fool. Maybe you did. Maybe that's why all the quarreling, all the fighting, any fool will quarrel. And you know what? Fools will quarrel about anything. They don't even have to be right. They can even know they're wrong, and they're just going to fight because I'm a fool. Look at Proverbs 24. Wisdom is too exalted for a fool, so he does not open his mouth in the gate. So it went, again, a great way to tell. How do I know if somebody's a fool? What do they talk about? Because the gate was the place where decisions were made. They had theological conversations in this place. Disputes were resolved at the gate. And so a fool would go to the gate, and the first thing he'd do is just shut his mouth. Because he knew he had nothing of value to add to the conversation. There's wise people talking, and wise people are talking, they're saying, I can't say anything. Well, what kind of things do your friends talk about? Wise things? Are they able to engage on thought-provoking type of issues? Or are they talking about like the Kardashians and who they're dating now or what they're wearing now? It's amazing when you see some of these videos that they'll do, and they'll quiz all these college students, and they'll ask them about Declaration of Independence or the Civil War. Who was the Civil? You know, who fought the Civil War? Who won the Civil War? All of these things, and they have no idea. But you ask them who about Brangelina, or who Taylor Swift is dating, and they know. But they got to keep silent in the gate. Silent in the gates. You know why? Because Proverbs says they're fools. And there are dozens of verses. Man, we could have just kept going on and on and on. Those are just a few. In fact, you know what a great thing to do would be? Just do a word study on the word fool through Proverbs. Fool, foolish, fools. Those, just do a word study on that. Well, you'll find so much neat stuff. Proverbs 29, verse 11. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. Are your friends fools? Are the people who are the greatest influences in your life, are they fools? Well, what's the cure for a fool? Actually, the great thing is Proverbs talks about that too. Look at Proverbs 26, verse 3. A whip is for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the back of fools. You know what the cure is for a fool? Is he needs a rod to his back. You go, what does that mean? Because we're not like caning people anymore. What does that mean? You know what it means? It means he needs to feel the full weight of the consequences of his own sin and foolishness. Like, that's what he needs, because a rod is made for that. And honestly, as parents, that's why we spank our kids, because we don't want them to be fools. That's what prisons are for. That's what speeding tickets are for. You know, oftentimes fools get fired from jobs and expelled from school because they're fools. Those are modern-day rods to our backs so that we don't stay fools forever. And so fools will say things like, I don't care, or you make a big deal out of everything, or I can handle it. But the reality is a fool ultimately because he has taken God out of the equation. A fool is a fool because God is not part of his decision-making process. In fact, the Bible gives a half of one verse to the atheist. Actually, not even a half, a third of one verse to the atheist. Look what it says, Proverbs 14, verse 1, just the first part. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They're fools, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And as soon as you take God out of the equation, you no longer have the foundation to make wise decisions. So an atheist may have a PhD. He may have all kinds of letters after his name. But I can tell you what the Proverbs says about him. He's a fool. You take God out of the equation, you're a fool. And so the applicable part here is, what's the wise thing to do? Right? What is the wise thing to do? So if this is the value of friends, and these are choosing friends, and this is what a fool looks like, and man, I'm a fool in my own life, or I am surrounded by fools. Like, so what do I do now? What's the wise thing to do? And so let's look at that. Number one, leave the fools. Leave them. That's not very nice. This is what Proverbs says. Proverbs 14, verse 7. Leave the presence of a fool, or you will not discern words of knowledge. Leave them. They're taking you to destruction. Look at the next one, Proverbs 22. Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man. Why? Or you will learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. In other words, stay away from the guy that yells at his wife, yells at his parents, yells at his kids, complains about the government. Stay away. Why? Because you're going to be a fool too. The longer you stay there, the more likely you will be a fool. Stay away from fools, because the longer you hang out with fools, you're heading for destruction. We saw last week, we said, talking about a slanderer and a gossip, to stay away from them as well. We said stay away from flatterers. We stay away from flatterers because ultimately they don't care about you. They care about themselves. So if they just care about themselves, they really can't be a friend who loves at all times. And if you think about it, you know, if you got a gossip, and like, if they're going to talk to somebody else or talk to you about somebody else, who do you think they talk to when you're gone? They talk about you. And so the wisest thing to do is to stay away from fools. And when I'm saying that, the thought that keeps going through my mind is, but how do we reach them for Christ? If we're not ever around them, how do we reach them for Christ? I don't think that's what it's saying. I think the point is that you want your closest friends and the biggest influences of your life to be from those who know and follow Jesus. That's who you want giving input in your life. That's what it means to walk with the wise. And so if you have a friend that's pushing you towards immorality, pushing you towards drunkenness, pushing you towards gossip, pushing you away from the things of God and the clear teaching of his scriptures, then you're heading for destruction. And so the wise thing to do, first and foremost, leave the fool. Leave them. Number two, and these are so obvious, choose the wise. Choose the wise. And so we did a pretty thorough search on what a fool is, but we also need to know who the wise are. And we saw some contrast earlier in some of the verses, but let's kind of build on that. Proverbs 1:5 says this, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. You know how you know if you're around a wise person? They listen. And they continue to learn. They continue to seek counsel. Here's a good summary of a wise person on this. Is a wise person knows that they don't know it all. They know. I don't know everything. I'm teachable. Look at Proverbs 9, verse 8. He says, do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase his learning. You see the common theme here? A fool thinks he knows it all, but really his only desire is to reveal his own mind, which ultimately means he's revealing that he really knows little to nothing. Whereas a wise man knows a lot, but he wants to know more, even if that means he has to be reproved in order to know it. We read earlier, remember Proverbs 12:1, if you hate reproof, you're stupid. I've never met somebody who says, man, I just love being corrected. I love reproof, right? I've never really met anybody that would just out and out say that. But if you think about it, like, if you're wrong, don't you want to know? If I'm wrong about something, I want to know that I'm wrong. I don't want to keep being wrong. I want to know. I just want to be corrected in love by a person who demonstrates love for me. Right? I mean, I want to know if I'm wrong. I just want to be corrected by that person in private because I know they love me and they say it in such a way that it's loving. So we really don't want correction. We don't want to disregard correction. We just want to be told the right way. And so a wise person wants to be corrected so he can be wiser. And that's so much different than a fool, isn't it? A wise person makes his father glad because he listens to correction. A wise person holds back his temper because he cares about others more than himself. A wise person turns away from evil because he's able to calculate and count the cost before stepping foot towards danger. And so if you want wise people to build in your life, look for those kind of traits. And here's another one, Proverbs 11, verse 30 says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who is wise wins souls. So if you want somebody to build wisdom into your life, then look for somebody who's winning people to Christ and building them up in their faith. They're caring for their souls. And so that kind of person will not only model a godly life, but that kind of person is going to ask hard questions. That kind of person is going to encourage you to live a godly life. You want somebody in your life that loves you enough to correct you. You want somebody in your life who will confront you. And you want them to be able to confront you as a friend. But so many friends, they say, well, I don't want to confront them on that because if I confront them on it, then they're going to be mad at me. They're not going to like me. And they'll say, I'm a true friend because I'm not going to call them out. If that's true, then really, when it all comes down to it, you actually don't really care about them. You only care about you. Because what you're saying is, I don't want to confront them because I'm afraid that I'm going to lose this friendship. Which tells me you don't really care about them. You only care about you. You want a friend who is willing to risk the friendship to get you back on track. You want a friend that says, hey, you know what, the way you talked to your wife a few minutes ago, man, that wasn't good. You need to apologize. You need to ask for forgiveness. Look at Proverbs 27, verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And the one thing that I've seen every time is when iron sharpens iron, sparks fly. Right? Metal is sharpened when you take those dull edges and you grind them down. And so a wise friend sees your dull edges and he helps you to get them sharp. And whenever that happens, it typically is hard. So a wise friend tells you when you're wrong. A wise friend tells you when you need to apologize. A wise friend tells you when you need to make things right. A wise friend will tell you when you need to change. And if you're wise, then you'll listen. So do you have a wise friend in your life? And are you being more influenced by wise people or by fools? And if you're influenced by the wise, then you'll be wise. And if you're influenced by the fools, then you're going to be destroyed. And so the first thing for you probably is, hey, I need to leave the fool and choose the wise. And then I need to be that wise friend. Brings to point three. Well, how then, if I've got the wise friend, how do I maintain the wise friendships? So I tried to narrow this down really to three principles here. A here is consistency. And they all start with a C. All my Baptist friends will be really proud of me. Couldn't do that with anything else, but I got the C's on this last part. It's consistency. And when I say consistency, I'm not saying you need to consistently be at their house. Okay? I have a great verse for this. You need to memorize this. Proverbs 25, verse 17. Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you. Don't you love that? And let me tell you, I'm kind of ashamed to say it. We used this one time on a neighbor. Man, this lady would, I mean, just every hour of the day, 3 o'clock in the morning, she's knocking on our door. You know, throughout the day, Sherry's there. It's just a constant. And then she would always throw the Bible verses in there, you know what I mean? And then God gave me this. I thought, oh, he is so good. Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you. Don't text them every night. Don't go to their house every night. It says here, rarely be in your neighbor's house. And so you go, well, how does that match up with consistency? I'm saying that you are consistently there for them because a friend loves at all times. All times, though, is not chronological. It's faithful. Being a faithful friend. In other words, you're a friend even when they're a jerk. You're a friend when they've hurt you and when they've sinned against you. You're a friend when times are good and when times are bad. I mean, think about the marriage relationship. Honestly, my best friend is my wife. I'm a friend when she's a jerk, which happened like 25 years ago once. And you know what? She doesn't leave me when I'm a jerk, which happened probably 25 minutes ago. A friend loves at all times. A friend's always there. It's consistency. And honestly, the closer you get to somebody, the more you see their sin. And the closer you get to somebody, the more they'll see yours. Here's the encouragement, though. You are never going to be asked by God to forgive anybody any more than what Jesus has forgiven you. He will never put that requirement on you. And so the second one, B here, is counsel. You need consistency, faithfulness, you need counsel. So if you're going to maintain a close friendship, you're going to have to mutually counsel each other. It's not one person talking and the other person listening. Okay, that just leads to frustration and arrogance. It's mutual. It's building into each other's lives. And sometimes when we counsel, we do it with sweetness of speech. And sometimes when we counsel with each other, it's iron sharpening iron and sharp sparks fly. But it's mutual. You build into me, I build into you. You counsel me, I counsel you. That's how you're going to grow. And all of us, every single one of us, bar none, we all have blind spots where we need people who will speak truth into our lives, who love us, and who are able to see those areas clearly. And we talk about here all the time. You know, we say we want to one another. And we always use those encouraging ones, right? Love one another, encourage one another, comfort one another, care for one another. Those are the good ones. But you know, the same one another's are rebuke one another. Reprove one another, admonish one another. Same ones. That's what's supposed to happen when friends in the body of Christ come together. And the last one, C, is Christ. He's the model. He's the source of our strength. He's the foundation and the model of wise friendships. I mean, just think about it. On the night before his crucifixion, he's eating with friends. 11 of those friends would not show up at his crucifixion. One would out and out betray him. 3 would fall asleep while they're supposed to be praying for him. And 1 would deny him 3 times. And knowing this, Jesus knowing all things, right? Knowing this, you know what he tells them just before that? He says, no longer do I call you slaves, but I call you my friends. Because he's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. He's the one that loves at all time. He's the one that calls us no longer his enemies, but his friends. And he left heaven, he became a man, to temporarily lose his friendship with the Father. And then on the cross, the Father poured out all the wrath of hell onto him. And he did that so that we would no longer be enemies, that he would open up the door that would allow us to be friends. And so through his death and his resurrection, the relationship with the Father has been made possible for us. He's a friend that loves at all times. If you don't know him, there is no better time than today to come into a relationship with him. And if you're thinking, I have no clue. Listen, don't leave here today without knowing that truth. I'm always back in the back. You're welcome to talk to me. There's other people here. You saw the people greeting and other folks running people up here or whatever. Just talk to them. Maybe if somebody invited you, talk to them. Don't leave here today not knowing whether you are in that relationship with Jesus as your friend or not. Let's pray together. Our Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for this look at friendships and how our lives are dramatically impacted by the friends that we have. Father, I thank you for your word that you've given us, that we might look into it as a mirror to our own souls and not be condemned, but to be convicted. I thank you that there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ. And yet in the areas we're convicted in, we do ask that you'd bring about repentance, godly sorrow that leads to repentance. And Father, I pray for the friendships and relationships that people have in our own congregation. God, I pray that you would bring wise people into our lives you would help us to leave the fools, or at least minister to the fools, that they too might know Christ. Thank you for this body. Thank you for the way that you mold us and shape us after the image of your Son. We pray in his name. Amen.